Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This month marks 2 years of the podcast, and so far, the only guest I've spoken to twice is Rosanna Davison.
And I suppose all you can offer is your compassion and support and love and, you know, do your best, I suppose, just to show that you are there to support them. Then there are others who, like me, there was no sort of medical explanation really for not being able to have a baby, but it did just all come together in whatever way it did, and it all worked out. So I suppose for those people, I want to be able to show that, you know, miracles really do happen, and especially when you least expect them as well, and to give them that sense of hope.
Rosie lives in Dublin with her husband Wes and their three kids, daughter Sophia and identical twin boys Hugo and Oscar. And this episode is a natural follow-on from her first conversation, as she shares some of the revelations in her brand new book, When Dreams Come True, including having another miscarriage in February 2020, just before their twin boys were conceived, and how the number 11 seems to show up wherever she goes. Here it is. I'm so happy that you said yes to having this conversation, because in the 2 years of the podcast so far, you're the first guest to return for a follow-up chat. And, you know, we're speaking, and I didn't even realise at the time that this is Baby Loss Awareness Week. So it feels once again like this was meant to be.
Yeah, I think the timing is really good, really for your situation and mine and our stories and how our stories, you know, how they sort of mirror each other in certain ways. You're obviously heading towards the end of your pregnancy, and I'm so happy for you. It's, you know, it's such an exciting time for you too.
So exciting, and I feel really lucky, but it's, I now get it, you know, I now understand what it's like to be pregnant after experiencing loss, and it's different. It is different. The last time we spoke, it was the 11th of July last year, and it was, I think, about a week or two before you officially announced you were pregnant with Hugo and Oscar, which I think blew everybody's, I know it blew your mind when you heard the news first, but certainly as a people, I mean, I think the Irish nation just kind of took a huge intake of breath and just went, wow.
I've since spoken about how long it took me to feel ready to even tell my closest friends about the pregnancy. I had so many different complex emotions to work through before that. And, you know, as I've said recently, obviously joy, gratitude, excitement were amongst the main emotions I was feeling as it became apparent that I was pregnant with two, not even one healthy baby, yeah. two healthy babies. But also, and this is something I've spoken about just in the last kind of week or so, is this sort of strong survivor's guilt feeling. Mm. And it was an emotion I didn't anticipate because, you know, I never expected to be in the position of being pregnant in the first place. For all intents and purposes, I thought I was the girl who couldn't have a baby, and I'd been told by a doctor that it was unlikely I'd ever carry my own. So to find myself, you know, heading towards a healthy full-term pregnancy last year, I had this sense that I shouldn't be so lucky. I had a guilt towards every other kind of woman and man out there who hasn't been as lucky as we have, you know, finding ourselves here in this situation with three healthy babies. And it took a long time really to work through that and to sort of tell myself that I had been through so much already that I should start feeling just excited and grateful for what was happening. But yeah. I couldn't help but feeling, you know, just guilty for everyone else who hasn't been so lucky, and the people that are still fighting to have their families and their much longed for children. So there was that, and I suppose the anxiety we just touched on there a few minutes ago, the anxiety of being pregnant after loss. As you said, miscarriage steals your innocence about pregnancy, and the idea that pregnancy just should be a joyful, natural sort of experience full of love and, you know, gratitude for growing life. It steals that sort of sense of innocence. And I cringe a little bit looking back to when we first started trying for a baby, when I used to think it would be just so easy and straightforward. So when I saw you last year, I was still trying to work through all of that and to reverse what I thought I knew about myself, which was that my whole identity was at that stage wrapped up in being the girl who had a baby through surrogacy, and I was very comfortable with that. So, you know, us women are landed with an awful lot of complex emotions, I think.
I get what you're saying completely. I mean, obviously, you know, your experience is yours, mine is mine, and while there are similarities, there are differences too. But I do get what you're saying, hugely in terms of when I announced I was pregnant this time around, I felt a massive sense of responsibility to the people who would, say, watch the miscarriage documentary that we were both part of that was made for TG Cahill. And the amount of people that reached out to me, and I know that far more have reached out to you and shared their experience. You know, you kind of, you work through all these different things. And I did get a lot of messages from people saying, you know, thank you for being mindful. Thank you for the way you said it. But also, you're entitled to feel happy. And I thought that was really lovely to hear. Yeah. Yeah. And important to be said. And like that, when you announced your news, there was such an overwhelming sense of joy for you and for both of you, for everything you'd been through. I don't think there was a person that wouldn't have felt anything but, wow, isn't this amazing? And I think it showcases the type of person you are, that you were very mindful of that and very cognizant of it.
Because you don't forget what you've been through on a difficult journey, and you don't forget the people who haven't been able to experience that sense of joy of being pregnant yet. And, you know, the outpouring of love and support and all of that shown to us, I mean, last year and this year, we're just so incredibly grateful for that. So I just want to, you know, say thank you to everyone who's reached out and been so kind to us. Yeah. You know, it's meant a huge amount to have that. You know, just Irish people are so lovely. Mm. You know, it was just so nice of them. And it just helped the whole experience for me and Wes to have that support as well behind us.
Yeah. So a month after we sat down to have the chat for the podcast, we also sat down outside. And you and all your pregnancy glory, of course, the news is out at this stage.
And there was no hiding it. I mean, you know, twin pregnancy gets big very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think when I was in with you the previous month doing the podcast, I was able to hide my bump under a big scarf and a big jacket. And I'd met friends earlier that week and they must have thought I was bonkers wearing all these oversized clothes, and the weather was quite warm. It was summertime. And, you know, I was there popping into the supermarket and a big oversized winter coat. So just the practicalities alone lockdown made it impossible to hide it anymore.
Yeah, but it was great to see you then embrace it and enjoy it and and be the epitome of the glowing pregnant woman, which you absolutely were. So look, here we are. It's October 2021. Your book, Dreams Come True, has just been released. Massive congratulations on it.
Thank you so much. I don't know either, to be perfectly honest, but I think earlier in the year, I was still in a haze of just that newborn sort of exhaustion and trying to recover from pregnancy. And I did do a large chunk of it last autumn when I was still pregnant and, you know, had a bit more time, not an awful lot since Sophia was just little, but did a lot of it then. And I went back to it then in February this year. And I think when you're given a deadline, you just find a way to get it done. I do remember it being stressful and having to get my mom in and various people to help out on certain days when I had to get more work done. And I really had to speed up the process then towards the end. But really from February to May this year, I did a lot of the book as well. And then suddenly, you know, at the beginning of the year, I thought, oh, October is ages away. But then suddenly it's publication day and it's out. And, you know, this is the nice part now, is being able to talk about it and share the, you know, more intimate details of the story. And really, there was nothing really that I left out in terms of detail of our journey from the very beginning when we started trying to have a family in late 2015, right up until really the boys were 6 months old, was kind of the last stage of the book, just describing family life and having, you know, three children under two.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I did include all the details because when I was writing it, I thought, you know, should I maybe not include so many of maybe the gory details about the experience of miscarriage and everything that goes on, the pain and the exhaustion. But then, you know, I wanted to give a very real and raw and personal account of the journey Wes and I have been on in the last few years. So, you know, I decided to just include all of the emotions and to really try to connect with the grief and the loneliness and the trauma of infertility and pregnancy loss, because it's, you know, no matter, I think, a person's journey and even the outcome of a person's journey, you know, we all do experience similar emotions when we're going through the process or going through the journey, whether you're having IVF or going through surrogacy, or, you know, maybe you're just at the beginning and trying to get pregnant. There's that sense of the unknown that I really tried to capture in the book as well.
And I think, you know, it'll be a powerful read for whoever, you know, buys the book and reads it. And I have no doubt it'll be a massive bestseller and it'll be in a lot of Christmas stockings for people as well. But also for your kids in time when they're of an age when they can read it and read back on what like what mum and dad went through and and how wanted and desired and loved they were from the beginning and how much that you guys wanted to have a family.
Yeah.
It'll just be beautiful.
Well, I think I was only saying to someone the other day that by the stage that Sophia and Hugo and Oscar are old enough to read the book and, you know, understand it, I'll probably be really old and really embarrassing to them. And I'll be old, embarrassing mum. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Obviously, I wrote the book for all of the women and men out there who have struggled or will struggle in the future to have a family, you know, to try to normalize the conversation and the discourse around pregnancy loss and infertility and IVF and surrogacy. And I think I was so sort of, I got so fed up actually of feeling ashamed and embarrassed and, you know, feeling like I should stay quiet about fertility particularly back when I started sort of experiencing my difficulties or our difficulties in around 2016. I remember back then just feeling ashamed of my body, ashamed that I couldn't carry a baby. You know, I was watching my friends all around me having seemingly effortless, easy, full-term, healthy pregnancies and thinking, why can't I just get a baby to grow in my body? Mm. And then, you know, being very much aware of the silence and the stigma surrounding pregnancy loss. And I think I just got fed up of not being confident in talking about it, that I did a lot of work on myself and I did a lot of work on trying to feel less ashamed and less embarrassed that I couldn't have a baby without help. And, you know, I want now for women and men to be able to talk openly about fertility and maybe the difficulties they're having or the fears they have. And, you know, this is also for the people out there who may face it in the future as well. I want them to go into trying to have a family, you know, feeling that, well, it might not necessarily work first time around, or there may be bumps along the way, but, you know, here is a story of hope and a story of survival and a story that miracles really do happen. Because I would have loved a story like ours, you know, back 4 or 5 years ago. And I used to, you know, stay up late at night reading all these message boards and threads and things on fertility websites, just desperately looking for a story of hope and a story that things do work out. So, you know, I want my book to be able to be there for people going through difficulties.
And you're so right, when you're in it yourself and you are struggling, or, you know, you are wanting something so much, but it hasn't happened yet. It's hearing somebody else's experience that, you know, through adversity, they have maybe achieved what you're hoping to achieve, regardless of what it is. It does inspire you, and it does give you that sense of, oh, it can happen to me too. So what you're doing is really, it's powerful, and it's so incredibly selfless. So look, the first time we spoke, we had a really comprehensive conversation about your surrogacy journey. We spoke about miscarriage, but I just kind of want to go back to January of last year. So January 2020, pre-COVID, Sophia is just a few weeks old at this stage, and you're already kind of having the chats about getting the wheels in motion to try surrogacy again, to have a sibling for Sophia.
I had mentioned to our pregnancy coordinator over in Kiev after Sophia was born that, you know, we had had such a positive experience and obviously had our precious baby daughter out of it that, you know, I said to her, we'd love to try again for a sibling in the not too distant future. And she said, okay, well, you know, I'll have a chat with your surrogate when, you know, she's recovered sufficiently from childbirth. And that was fine, and we left it for a little while, and it was actually the 1st of January 2020 I got a text message from our surrogate to say, you know, happy new year, I just want to let you know that I would love to give you a sibling, or try to give you a sibling for Sophia. And she said she would be cleared, medically cleared, to get pregnant again in July 2020. So I remember just bursting into tears at this news. You know, it seemed like the perfect way to start the new year. She felt that she would be ready that summer. And I just sort of let go of all the anxieties I had about having a sibling for Sophia. I mean, we would have been absolutely delighted with our one baby, and she was everything we had ever wished for. But at the same time, you know, Wes comes from a family of four. You know, he's two brothers and a sister, and I have two brothers. And we did always feel like, you know, if we were lucky enough to have one child, then wouldn't it be fabulous just to have one more and just, you know, give the baby a brother or sister, because we had had such a nice experience with our families. So that, you know, it just seemed wonderful that she was willing to go again. So Wes and I at this stage had completely stopped actively thinking about having a baby ourselves. But I think when you're going through maybe a struggle with trying to get pregnant, you never totally stop trying either. You know, you always keep that element of hope. And I thought, you know, I'll never prevent it from happening. I had this fear of losing out on a monthly cycle for whatever reason. So, you know, you don't try to prevent it. You know, that's what I'm trying to say. But we just sort of forgot about it and looked forward to going through the process again last, you know, in what would have been July last year. And it got to February anyway, 2020. And I remember feeling increasingly exhausted. And I put it down to obviously having a newborn. Sophia was 2 or 3 months old at that stage, and she had pretty erratic sleeping patterns, as newborns do. Wes had gone back to work, so he was sleeping in the spare room and I was taking on all the nights. And I had gone back to work. I mean, I went over for an event in Germany in early February, and, you know, my mum was helping out a lot. We didn't have childcare, so I was exhausted. And I remember it was about mid-February, Wes ordered an Indian takeaway, and I smelt it and just my stomach turned and I felt so nauseous, and I had this funny nausea on and off, I remember, around the middle of that month. Again, I put it down to, I mean, I feel ridiculous even thinking about it now, because I would have always known when I was pregnant. My body just would have felt different immediately. But when you're in that sort of exhausted state with a newborn, you kind of put everything down to just being sleep deprived.
Course,
and I just thought, well, I'm obviously not eating properly. I was, you know, probably drinking too much coffee, not eating enough nourishing food, relying on, you know, snacks a lot. So I put it all down to that. Mm. And then towards the end of February, the exhaustion started to lift and I began to feel better. And I just thought, okay, obviously we're getting more sleep now. She's kind of sleeping 5 hours straight. And, you know, I put it down to that. Mm. So I went on the Late Late show last year at the end of February and, you know, talked about my miscarriage history and the surrogacy process with Sophia. And that was lovely. And the response was wonderful after that. But it was the very next day I began to bleed. And I thought at the time, well, I haven't had a period in a couple of months because obviously I've been so tired. My body's all over the place. So this is obviously a good sign that my body is beginning to balance itself again. Thought nothing of it. A few days went by. It was a bit patchy on and off. And on the Tuesday evening, I was changing Sophia downstairs in the kitchen and I began to get this intense cramping. I mean, so bad I had to lie down with a hot water bottle. And after a few minutes of sort of lying down, I said, OK, I'm going to stand up and go to the bathroom because, I felt sick with the pain. And I stood up and just an awful lot of blood came out. Sorry. And this is what I was saying earlier. There's no way of explaining the realities of a miscarriage at home without talking about the more, squeamish parts for some people. But anyway, I ran to the bathroom and Wes came after me and he was saying, "Are you okay? What's happening?" I said, "No, it's just a heavy period. It's obviously just a build up from the last couple of months. I'll be fine." And, you know, it didn't take long before then I was lying on the bathroom floor, curled up in a ball with the pain. I mean, it was just the most excruciating cramps. You know, when you break out into a cold sweat then, if you're going through something painful. And at this stage, there was, you know, quite a lot of blood and tissue and bits and pieces. But I kept saying to Wes, "No, it's just a period. I can't have a baby. You know, it couldn't be anything else." I mean, I was convinced. Mm-hmm. And so it was about 9 o'clock in the evening and Wes said, "No, I'm ringing your mom. I'm not happy with the amount of blood you're losing." So he rings my mom and she comes rushing over, takes one look at me and brings me into Holles Street Maternity Hospital. And they were very good. They scan me immediately. They take a urine test and tissue samples to the lab. And they come back about 20 minutes later and say, "Well, we can confirm you actually were pregnant. The lab has confirmed presence of pregnancy tissue." I was saying, "No, that's not possible. You know, it's just simply my body can't do that." And so the nurse said, "You know, when was your last period?" I said, 19th of December. So we counted then forward and I would have been 10 and a half weeks pregnant. And I remember the nurse, you know, gently saying, "I'm so sorry. There's a counselling service if you'd like to avail of it. Please let me know if there's anything we can do to support you." And I remember smiling at her with this excitement, just saying, "I can't believe I've got to 10 and a half weeks pregnant. My body has made pregnancy tissue. I've never even got past 6 and a half weeks. This is amazing." And I think her reaction totally shocked her, because, you know, it's not what you expect. And I said to her, "You know, I have a beautiful 3-month baby to go home to. I'll be absolutely fine. This is amazing." Mm-hmm. And my mom was kind of smiling as well, going, "Rosie, I can't believe this." So it was at that stage where, you know, it was just a bizarre series of events, really, where I thought that gave me a glimmer of hope. And I just thought, is there some way, something has happened in my body, whether it's just the settling down into life with a newborn or switching off my head and not thinking about trying to have a baby myself. I think maybe the text from the surrogate, because I would have got pregnant around that day or the following day. Mm. So maybe the text from the surrogate did something to relax me. I don't know. And there's no medical or scientific way we can ever say, and I have talked to my doctor as well, and there's nothing we can say that confirms either way what had happened in a physiological sense.
Your gut feeling though tells you that.
My gut feeling is something switched off inside of me, and I know that you're a believer as well in sort of letting go. So maybe I just took the pressure off and anxiety reduced. So that was amazing. And I remember that night as well in hospital, a separate doctor and a nurse both said to me, you know, you're going to be extra fertile after a miscarriage at this stage. So, you know, if you don't want, you know, to get pregnant so soon after, then just be a little bit careful. But was I careful? No, I was the opposite of careful. I thought, this is amazing, Wes, we can't miss this opportunity. We just have to, you know, see what happens this next month. And so anyway, COVID came along, lockdown happened. We all know how that felt. There was an awful lot of anxiety and terror, I suppose, in the outside world. And we all looked on in horror at what was going on in Northern Italy and China. But within our little bubble at home, we really relaxed into our routine. And it felt so lovely, I think, to just be at home, the three of us together with our baby. And, you know, I didn't have to put pressure on myself to go out to work or worry about having to get a baby ready and myself ready to go out and do something. So whatever happened, I relaxed, as a lot of people did, I suppose, back then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It got to mid-April. My birthday is the 17th of April. And I remember feeling sort of tired and sort of lightheaded around then. And the day after my birthday, Wes caught me crying. I mean, randomly, at all sorts of things. I remember him walking into the kitchen saying, "Rosie, I've caught you crying like at five things today. What is wrong with you?" And I said, "I don't know. I just feel really emotional." And you know, that was a little bit out of character for me. I wouldn't be that much of a crier. But the following morning, anyway, I was still feeling lightheaded. So I said, I'll take a pregnancy test and see what happens. And I had no idea what stage I was at my cycle then. I hadn't had another period at that stage. And I think after a miscarriage as well, your cycle goes a little bit off. And so you're not sure kind of where you're at. So I took a test and two strong pink lines came up immediately. And I went downstairs and showed it to Wes, and we kind of looked at each other and went, "Oh, this again." You know, there was no sense of excitement as maybe you'd feel if it was the first time you'd taken a test. And that really relates back to the innocence being stolen from pregnancy, I think. So we just thought, okay, we'll just see what happens. I had thought I was about 6.5 to 7 weeks pregnant. So I texted a doctor I'd seen previously in Holles Street and just said to him, you know, I was in last month for having a very painful miscarriage out of the blue. So what do you think I should do? And he said, "Well, come in next week and we'll scan you." So I went in the following week. Now, this is sort of towards kind of the last week in April, say.
And this is also the height of restrictions. So
I hadn't left the house barely. I had to get past a guard checkpoint, but obviously I was allowed to go into an early pregnancy scan, you know, for any medical reasons we were allowed out. And so I went in.
You were on your own.
I was on my own, of course. Wes was home with Sophia, and he wasn't allowed to any of my scans that year or last year. So went in and the doctor scanned me and he detected a sac, but it was empty. And he'd said, look, I'm really sorry, but if you're at the stage you think you are, which is 6.5 to 7 weeks, we would be able to see something there and a heartbeat. So I was a little bit disappointed, but I mean, it was nothing new to me. I was used to disappointment. So rang Wes as I was leaving and just said, look, I'm sorry, it's not going to work. We're going to have to just knuckle down and get through. I was assuming I was going to have another miscarriage in the next week or so. So went home and sort of prepared myself mentally for it to happen again. And obviously being in lockdown, I wasn't seeing my family. You know, there was that sort of element of a lack of support as well. So when nothing happened over the weekend, I actually felt increasingly tired and a little bit nauseous as well. I said to the doctor, you know, nothing's happened. So he said to come in again for another scan, because it does sometimes happen that women get their dates wrong. And so went in again and he scanned me, and this time, and I have it all on film because I was filming it to show Wes, and this time he detected a heartbeat. And of course I burst into tears, and it was just the most amazing experience to finally get to the stage. I'd never seen a heartbeat on a scan before. I'd never got to that point, so this was amazing in itself. And so second week in a row I rang Wes on the just on the way out and said, you'll never guess, there's a heartbeat. But we agreed that we wouldn't tell anyone or, you know, get too excited about it. So that was that. And then the doctor wanted to keep a close eye on me, so he got me in for a third week for a third scan. And that day, you know, I was really excited to see my tiny developing baby and see how it was doing. And, you know, everything felt right in terms of, you know, I was feeling increasingly hormonal, as you do in early pregnancy. And bloated as well. I couldn't believe how bloated I was so early on. But he scanned me again. And as he was scanning, we both saw the original embryo with the heartbeat. But sort of beside it, we both spotted a shape. And I shrieked. I said, it's twins. There are two in there, isn't there? And he goes, just a second. And let me check. So he ushers in a nurse as well. So, you know, for a second sort of opinion. And we all peer at the screen, and there to the left of the original baby was another developing baby with a heartbeat as well. And just the feeling of, you know, he confirmed it. He said, yep, there are two in there and they're in separate sacs, but sharing a placenta, which means they're identical twins. Wow. And just the, I'll just never forget it. I suppose the language out of me was one thing I could I didn't know what to say except swear. But again, I have it all on film, so I'll be able to show them all one day, hopefully. And then for the third week in a row, on the way out, I ring Wes and I said, I hope you're sitting down, you're not going to believe this. There are two in there. And I mean, to go from being the girl who I thought, you know, I wasn't able to even have one baby, to actually having two in there was extraordinary. So I told my parents as well, and lots of excitement, but they were pragmatic about it, and we all agreed that it was early days. I was only about 7 weeks at this stage, and to just not get too excited. But the rest then, I mean, you know, the rest is history. And it was Hugo and Oscar developing in there. And but it took me a long time to really believe that it would happen and it would work out. And I was closely monitored. I mean, being a twin pregnancy by its very nature means that it's considered high risk, especially as they were sharing placenta. So I was in at the beginning for weekly scans, and then they became fortnightly scans. And, you know, I think it's very reassuring when you start to feel movement as well. It just, it made me, you know, connect with the pregnancy, I suppose, every day between scans. But it was probably 27, 28 weeks before I actually thought, okay, this is really happening. You know, getting to the first week of viability, 24 weeks, was nice. I mean, I was quite relieved at that stage. But I remember my doctor saying, you know, once we get to about 28, 30 weeks, the twins have a very good chance of survival if anything happens. And then the aim was really to get me to 32 weeks and beyond. And in a twin pregnancy, I mean, as I said earlier, you get very big very quickly. And by about 27, 28 weeks, I was really, I felt big, and, you know, it was a struggle to kind of move around. So you're kind of grateful not to ever get to the 40 weeks. The plan was to deliver them at 36 weeks. But in the end, they arrived at 35. But yeah, it was just, looking back, it was just, it seems to have gone very fast, the whole pregnancy, but it was just a very smooth, healthy pregnancy. And I still find it hard to believe. I still look at the boys and think, where did you come from? Did you actually come out of me? I still can't believe it. But
well, as you said,
here,
like,
we are.
Here you are. And I mean, you're doing it. You're juggling like a mad thing with the three of them. And playing a blinder. No, you're amazing. But I know from the last chat we had, like, you spoke about how, you know, it was explained to you on numerous occasions that, you know, all the different reasons why perhaps, you know, having a pregnancy and continuing in your pregnancy was just not an option because of your supercharged immune system and various different reasons that were given to you. So it must be so hard when you're told this by medical professionals and then this happens. So, you know, as I mentioned when we sat down to have the chat for the miscarriage documentary, you have defied science. And it's that's why, you know, we do speak about, you know, miracles happening and things happening that there are no explanations for. Mm. These are examples of when it happens that you can be told X, Y, and Z. You can have results on paper that say one thing, but sometimes a little bit of magic trickles in and things happen. And it's important to share those stories because if it happened to you and it's happened to somebody else, it can happen to other people too.
Absolutely. I mean, in our case, I feel like everything aligned perfectly from January 1st, getting the message from the surrogate to having the miscarriage, as shocking as it was and as painful and exhausting as it was at the time, I think it did something then to enable the next pregnancy to happen so kind of easily and quickly. And maybe it even did something to enable twins to come along. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it all comes back to, I guess, the mystery of human reproduction. And, you know, the fact that we can know so much from a medical and scientific perspective, but really it comes down to, you know, nature and what your body is doing. And, you know, in our case, it was just, and lockdown as well happening as well, I think contributed to it all working out. But it just goes to show if that happened to us, then it can happen to plenty of other couples, women and men out there too.
You know,
I'm very much aware, and I was throughout this whole process and writing the book as well, that for plenty of people out there, there is no option. I mean, they can't, for whatever reason, have a family themselves. And I suppose all you can offer is your compassion and support and love and, you know, do your best, I suppose, just to show that you are there to support them. Then there are others who, like me, there was no sort of medical explanation really for not being able to have a baby, but it did just all come together in whatever way it did, and it all worked out. So I suppose for those people, I want to be able to show that, you know, miracles really do happen, and especially when you least expect them as well, and to give them that sense of hope. Because that's all we really have as humans, isn't it? It's just hope. And that's all we can really think about, is just hoping that something will work out.
Absolutely. And it's powerful. It's powerful
you
know, to have hope. When you lose sight of that, that can be, you know, that can be a dangerous zone to get in. And I think you are so mindful. The whole way along, you started the conversation, you've just said it again about how, you know, some people will essentially find this a very inspiring and hopeful conversation. Others will find it really challenging. And some people might just find it really difficult to hear because perhaps it's the end of the road in terms of their own fertility journey or whatever it might be. And you know, you're very mindful of that. And as am I. And it's...
Yeah, you are.
You know, but in saying that, all we can do is speak our own truth. And share our own experience. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, I really strongly feel that by sharing our stories and sharing our experiences and, you know, our raw emotions is the only way that we can really help to support others going through it. I just can't bear the idea of anyone going through it alone or going through it feeling ashamed or embarrassed. You know, there's nothing to feel ashamed about. It's whatever is going on in our bodies at any particular time. You know, it's nothing to feel embarrassed about. And I never want anyone to feel like I did, which was that my body was broken in some way or dysfunctional. You know, so it's about being able to speak openly about this subject and to normalize the fact that it unfortunately is a common occurrence for so many couples out there. And, you know, it's just the human body we're discussing, and it's we're all aware of how human reproduction works or it doesn't work. And, you know, it's just being able to speak about it without shame and embarrassment and stigma, I think, is really an important starting point.
And that's why, I suppose, you know, you especially, but so many others as well, I think have felt, and I have felt empowered by hearing you speak, to speak more honestly myself. And, you know, we know a lot of people, not just in the public eye, but who are maybe don't have a public profile, who are speaking now in a very positive and open way about their experience and normalising the conversation. And you've done such a huge service to actually move that along. Can we fast forward then to November when the boys were born? Because obviously there's only 3 days between, a year and 3 days between Sophia and Hugo and Oscar being born. So
yes, well, originally they were, well, from the beginning, my consultant said, you know, you're going to have a planned C-section delivery because of the nature of the pregnancy and the shared placenta. He felt it was the safest option for me and the boys. So that was planned for the 23rd of November, which is 2 days after Sophia's birthday. She turned one on the 21st. But I went in for sort of my last scan. I was having weekly scans towards the end. So I went in on the 17th for a routine scan, little checkup before the following week. So it would have been 5 days or 6 days before they were due. And the doctor found what he called placental resistance. So it meant that one of the twins, Oscar, had been getting more blood and more nutrients than Hugo. And Oscar had grown, I mean, something like nearly a pound in the previous fortnight, whereas Hugo had only grown by 2 ounces. So this triggered a little bit of panic, even though they all stayed very calm and professional, of course. But I think there was a bit of panic because I was brought in, I was asked to go home, grab my hospital bags, which were already packed, which is a good reason to pack hospital bags in advance, just in case of emergencies, to grab my bags, say goodbye to Sophia and get back into hospital. So, I mean, I was leaving the hospital at 2 o'clock and I had to be back in at 4. And they gave me a steroid shot to, you know, speed up lung development in the twins. So I flew home, had a bite to eat, gave Sophia a hug and went back into hospital, where I was monitored. Then the boys' heartbeats were monitored, you know, quite a lot that evening when I lay in bed. And then they were delivered the following morning. So they were born on the 18th of November, which is 3 days. It was 3 days before Sophia's first birthday. Wow. But it's quite nice. I mean, it means for 3 days of the year, they'll all be the same age. Yeah. We've actually planned a little photo shoot for the 19th of November, so next month. So we'll have 3 1-year-olds.
Oh, gorgeous.
In the photo, which will be quite sweet. And as the boys are growing, I mean, they're fairly big boys at this stage, and there's not huge amounts of size difference really between them, so it'll be nice to see our 3 1-year-olds in the photo.
Wow.
But, you know, I was very lucky again that this issue with the placenta was caught and Hugo was fine. It was only happening, I think, in the last couple of weeks. It wasn't and then going on before that, because they'd been growing very evenly before that. But Hugo was a little bit smaller when he came out. But, you know, I'm just very grateful that they were born safely. And I think you don't properly relax really until they've been born and you hear the first cry and you know that everything is okay.
Yeah, for sure. Because I'm 35 weeks now. You say, you know, this is why you should have the hospital bag ready. And I'm thinking, why don't I have my hospital bag ready yet? So I need to prioritize. I keep saying this week I'm going to pack it. This week I'm going to pack it. But I actually have to pack it.
Yeah, just in case there's any last minute things.
Totally. Because as you said, you just don't know. So numbers are a huge thing for you. You know, whenever we've spoken and I've heard you mention it, and it's in the book as well, about, you know, the importance of particularly 11/11. And again,
yeah,
November,
I can't believe it's the 11th. I just realized that.
That's the thing.
Bizarre.
It's not deliberate. We did not know. Yeah. It was more of a convenience thing. You were on the late on Friday. I wanted to have the chat with you, and I'm trying to get my last few podcasts recorded before I go on my own maternity leave. So it was simply a case of you were available on Monday. I didn't even know what date it was. And here it is. It's the 11th of October again.
I barely know what day it is anymore.
I know. I'm due in November. I obviously, when we spoke last year, I had no idea. I was hoping that we'd get pregnant again, but I had no idea. And here we are. You know, it's lovely. It's all these little... And some people might be a little bit cynical about it, but I definitely think that whatever gives you comfort and whatever makes you feel like you're on the right path, I think is a wonderful and powerful thing to cling on to as well. And, you know, I just feel there's no mistake in a lot of these things happening. And you mentioned it earlier on, the power of letting go. Sometimes it's the most challenging thing to do when you want something so hard. It's the idea of letting go, of knowing how it's going to come about. It can sound like impossible, to be honest, but actually that it's so powerful if you can allow yourself to get to a space where, you know, you can let go of needing to understand how something is going to work out. And I suppose, as you said, with your knowing that your surrogate was happy and wanting to go again for you guys, that took the pressure off, and that it almost kind of released a valve. Emotionally, mentally, and obviously physically as well, to allow a bit of magic to trickle in.
Yeah, I do strongly feel that whatever happened with those series of events early last year, it just released all this anxiety and worry and stress in me. And, you know, but as I said as well, it's very hard. You can't just tell somebody to relax and it'll happen, because, you know, as we all know, we have to think about the ovulation days and when you can actually get pregnant. But
sure,
I definitely do think that worked for me. And you do hear stories, I suppose, of people getting pregnant on holiday, or, you know, at times when they're probably more relaxed and forgetting about sort of the stresses of everyday life. But yeah, I think certainly in my case, I can't speak for anyone else, but certainly in my case, there was something maybe, and it was maybe anxiety and just general everyday stress that was preventing a pregnancy from developing normally, whatever was happening in my own sort of physiology. And of course, the irony, and I've talked about it in the book as well, the irony was that the more I couldn't have a baby, the more I threw myself into work and travel and trying to stay busy. And I think I was scared to be alone with my thoughts, or to spend too much time unoccupied where I would have to think more and more about the fact that we didn't have a family. So, you know, looking back, I did probably completely the wrong thing for my body and for my chances of having a successful pregnancy, which was, you know, be even more busy or more occupied, and put more stress on myself. But, you know, it's easy to look back and realize these things once you've been through them. But, you know, I suppose if I could give any advice, and, you know, my book or my story isn't obviously intended, or isn't, I'm not in a position to be able to say, well, this will work and this won't work, and, you know, do this, don't do that. But if I can give any advice, I suppose it's just to really be good to yourself if you're going through a battle with fertility, or if you're trying to get pregnant and nothing is happening. You know, be kind to yourself and take the time to relax and just de-stress, and, you know, reduce the cortisol levels in your body. And even though I'm terrible for always trying to be productive and not relaxing enough, but there you go. I suppose I'm not trying at the moment or at all. But, you know, just be good to yourself and do take the time to relax. And I think we've all realized, or a lot of us, even people from talking to people, at least in the last year, is that nobody really wants to go back to the busyness of life before COVID. I think we've all learned an awful lot about the power of just slowing down and being present and being mindful, and the fact that actually what is valuable in life is kind of the smaller things, the everyday, the simple moments. And, you know, for us, we don't get out that much. We go for our long walks in the morning, and we usually go to the park and bring the kids to the playground. But I mean, we don't get out of the house that much alone without the kids. But, you know, for us, it's just special being at home and watching them play together. And, you know, it's just all those simple everyday moments that are meaningful now for us. And there's, you know, there's great power in just appreciating the small things. And I think a lot of us didn't do that pre-pandemic. You know, yeah. I remember thinking, well, it hasn't been a fun week if I haven't kind of been to dinner or been to an event or, you know, gone away for the weekend. You know, I was always pushing to go away, or, you know, my brothers live in London, so I always wanted to visit them and go to events or go to the theatre or, you know, do things. I felt like I was never happy just being in my own company. Or just relaxing at home. So, you know, it's certainly taught us a lot about just enjoying just being at home and enjoying kind of your own company and...
Yeah, comfy gear and just chilling out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So before I let you go, what is a typical day like? Because I get the feeling from you that, you know, you guys are obviously really hands-on, and I know your mum is a great help as well, but... am I right in thinking that you don't really have a lot of other help necessarily?
No, we don't. Well, we don't have childcare at the moment. We did have a little bit of help over the summer just so we could, you know, go to dinner. And we did get out a couple of times to go for dinner over the summer, and a couple of times Wes and I went to lunch. But it does take a lot of planning to get the help and get the days and times organized, and even before going out having to get, you know, make the meals or the bottles or, you know, do all of that. There's quite a bit of planning. But yeah, at the moment it's me and Wes at home. My mum's here every day. She's just been fantastic. And, you know, we say to her, take the day off, relax. And she says, but I'd miss the babies.
Oh,
so,
brilliant.
I mean, she just loves it all. And she loves babies anyway. But, you know, she waited those few years anyway to have grandkids, and now she has them. She's just soaking up every moment as well. And my dad's great, and my brothers live in London, but when they're over, they're a huge help too. But yeah, at the moment we're just enjoying it all, and it's very hands-on. I mean, it's chaotic and it's noisy and it's messy and all of those things. But we've got a routine, and they're sleeping through. Well, we were up in the night with one of the twins, Hugo. He's getting a front tooth at the moment, and in bits with teething. But Oscar has 8 teeth and Hugo has 7, with the 8th coming down now.
Yes.
So it's been an intense few months of teething. But apart from that, they are sleeping well, and we're just quite rigid with routines and nap times and getting them fed at the same time so that we all get a little bit of a break during the day. But we're just enjoying it. And, you know, time goes so fast with them. And one moment they're tiny and the next they're running around. So we're
completely
just trying to embrace it all.
Yeah. And before you know it, you know, you'll have 4-year-old and 3-year-olds, and you'll be thinking, like, where did that go? Because, like, we have that now where we're kind of going, I'm just thinking, how do we go back to the baby stage? I feel like I have amnesia. I've completely forgotten what it's like to have a small baby, because
well, baby brain.
Yeah, baby brain is real. It's
it's
so real. But like the fact that Cathal is so, our little boy is 4, and he's so independent and easy to manage, but we have to go back. But look, we're delighted and looking forward to it. But you're in the thick of it now. But the great thing is, I suppose, they'll grow up as great little pals to each other and be so close in age that, you know, so many of their experiences will be so similar as well, because they're so close. And I'm just really excited for you. And I love to follow you on Instagram and see your brilliantly hilarious reels that you put up from time to time. And
I find that when I'm extra sleep deprived, that's when I do those silly videos.
They're brilliant.
And I know I'd love to do kind of more bits, but just finding the time, certainly from about kind of 4 o'clock in the afternoon up until they're all in bed, kind of 7, half 7, I barely even look at my phone. It's just so busy between, you know, bottles and dinner and bath and bedtime. It's just mayhem. But, you know, there are so many funny scenarios every day in our house. Like yesterday, we found Sophia trying to brush the dog's teeth. She has, you know, her own toddler toothbrush.
Oh,
and
no.
I looked around and poor Leo, one of our dogs, had the toothbrush in his mouth, kind of going, and she was there trying to brush his teeth. And then just things happened. Then today, one of the twins, Oscar, was in his walker and I had the fridge open, just getting bits and pieces out. And he grabbed the lower shelf where you keep kind of cartons of things and just wrenched the whole thing out.
Oh, no.
broke the braces on either side. And we were looking at him going, where is that strength coming from? So just mad things happen every moment of the day and you just have to roll with it.
Yeah.
And embrace all the mess and the crumbs and the chaos, and
yes,
the spillages and all of that. But yeah, it's mad. But I think you just adapt somehow to a certain level of chaos and mayhem, I think. And I just do the cleanup then when they're all in bed and, you know, disinfect the floors and do all of that once they're asleep.
Yeah,
and just try and
reset.
Keep on top of it. Yeah, exactly. And then you miss them. I mean, I find I can't wait until bedtime when I'm kind of tired by the afternoon. But then when they've been in bed an hour, I find myself looking at pictures and videos of them and missing them.
I know, and that never stops. That never stops. Like, we still do that every night where we go into Cahill when he's fast asleep. Yeah.
Such similar experiences. And then you kind of wish that you could have a break and just go out and be an adult and, you know, meet a friend for lunch or something, and then you feel guilty for doing it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Anyway, it's all of it's juggling. I mean, isn't that what parenthood is about?
Yeah, just, but you're bringing juggling to a whole new level. So you're
act here.
You're fantastic, and fair play to you. You're obviously such a great team, not just yourself and Wes, but your mum as well, being so hands on. And look, I'm excited. You know, next month is a big month. You're going to have your photo shoot. You're going to have your birthdays, and then
sorry, you're giving birth next month. Forget it. About my month. November is your month. Actually, both of our months. Sure. My three were all born in November as well. So it's again, it's the 11th. It's, you know, a special month, and it's a lovely month to have babies, I think, because you can just sort of get cozy and comfy in your home then, and, you know, the evenings are dark and it's cold and you can really just hibernate then. It's nice to have a winter baby.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I really am.
Yeah.
Rosie, thank you. It was so gorgeous to chat to you again. And, you know, I know everybody listening is just going to be beaming, smiling, listening to you. Thank you for your time, because I know, you know, time is precious and Sophie is about to wake up any minute. So
she's moving a bit. I'm watching her monitor here, but I think we've done really well.
Done brilliantly. Thank you.
We have. Thank you so much. And it's such a pleasure to talk to you again. And, you know, well done for all you're doing on raising awareness about miscarriage. And you've really been so sensitive and so kind to everyone in the way you've gone about it as well. And I'm just so pleased for you that you've got your baby on the way and it's all worked out for you as well.
You've been through
a difficult time. And,
thanks,
you know,
so
I just hope it all goes so well for you next month.
Thanks a million. That means so much to me. It really does. Okay, loads and loads of love, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Lots of love. Talk to you soon.
Bye, hon. Bye.
Thanks, Sheila.
Thank you.
Bye.
And Rosie's beautiful book, When Dreams Come True, The Heartbreak and Hope on My Journey to Motherhood, is available to buy online or in store now. And if you enjoyed our conversation, please show your support. It only takes a minute and I'd be so grateful. You can leave a rating or a little comment on Apple, or you can simply click follow on Spotify. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.